What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit Hyland.com.
Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do, get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off The Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Pat and Evan, good evening.
Good evening to you. A, I hope you're doing well. And B, I hope you're all bearing up under the news that's coming through in Ireland. That's a hard one to bear for everyone. Wales is getting the same for a couple of weeks. It's going to be hard, isn't it?
6 weeks. It's a decent stint in the hole if we're going for prison talk. That's how it feels, yeah. It's ominous, but needs to be done, seems to be the general agreement even amongst opposition. But it's grim, it's really tough. Psychologically, for people to go back in again is so difficult. So, yeah, I would say there are a few quiet households this evening across the country.
Yeah, it's to be honest, everywhere else and back in the UK, just sitting waiting for it to happen. You know, there may well be having different things over here. It's the kind of bits of lockdown here and there. But I think everybody knows now there's a real possibility that sometime between now and Christmas, and probably sooner rather than later, is going to be that lockdown. It's interesting listening to your reports there about, you know, top level sport is going to carry on. And I'm sure there'll be a few comments about that, whether, you know, why is sport different from anything else? To be honest, I personally am happy it's carrying on as long as it's safe and as long as it's not adding to the problems. Because when you're locked down, I'll tell you what, there's a hell of a lot of people, and I mean massive amount of people. Sport's the only thing that's going to keep you sane.
Yeah. I mean, the question mark here is over GAA, where it's amateurs and they're in the community and they're working in healthcare and, you know, various other occupations coming together, and there's no real bubble, in effect. That seems to be the dilemma over the coming days, but I won't bother you with that for the time being. How was your international break? We haven't talked in a while.
Well, oddly enough, you know, for Scotland, well, we were lucky with the, with our penalty kicks. We managed to get
well,
through.
Whatever, Pat, you know, I hope you enjoyed it.
Hey, we've waited a long time, man. Come on, give us a break. But that just put Scotland through to our final against Serbia. But oddly enough, we've gone through a period that, you know, in Ireland, many, many years of watching, you know, all the way back to Jack's team and stuff like that, where you kind of accept it wasn't great football, but, you know, it was getting the results and everyone got behind it. It's a bit like that in Scotland just now, because we're getting lots of results. It's 8 games in a row without a defeat against the might of San Marino and the Czech Republic C team and all that sort of stuff. But not losing any goals, and Stevie Clark's getting something. So there was some positivity, but I think there's been about one good game in those last 8. The rest have been awful. I've been dreadful to watch. So it was good kind of that. It was, what was weird is, like it is all the time, I'd be fortunate to go to a lot of the stadiums, and some stadiums are weirder than others when they're empty. And Hampden Park empty is horrendous.
It's a bowl. Just,
oh, it's just, it's because it's huge, because there's a gap between the stadium, I was going to say the fans, the stadium and the actual pitch itself. Mm. It's so cavernous. And so that was extreme, but that was outdone at the weekend when I was at Celtic Park for the Celtic Rangers game. And that, a Celtic Rangers game with nobody there. I'm getting the feeling that I've seen everything now in the game. I never thought I would see that. And it was an extraordinary scenario to see. Having said that, they actually produced a fairly interesting game.
Didn't they? Scotland's last major tournament, it's not 98, is it?
Yep.
Oof.
It's all that way back.
That's a stint.
Remember, in my time that I was playing, we just took it for granted. We'll be there. We were there all the time. We hardly ever failed to qualify.
Yeah.
And in that 98 one, it was our last minute header against Belgium that put us out. And we thought, oh, well, next time, next time, next time. And it's generations that have been missing it now. And you fall down there, you know, obviously the positions, you know, you're a group 14 now. And when you're falling that far down, you end up having to go by two or three right good teams to qualify for anything. So the idea is to try and keep as high as possible as long as you possibly can, because it's been horrendous for Scotland. And even now, there's a kind of feeling that if Scotland did actually manage to qualify for anything, it might be quite ugly when we get there. But hey, worry about that when it comes. But it's strange to see an entire, you know, whole generations of players never been in an international tournament. It's almost unbelievable considering, you know, I'd be sitting there and I'd Kenny Dalglish to my left and Graham Souness to my right and people like that, and you're thinking, yeah, this goes on forever. And then suddenly it's, whoa, amazing how much it's changed.
So these are strange times. We've had our first nil-all draw of the season, amazingly. West Brom and Burnley has finished nil-all. Leeds and Wolves has just kicked off. And we have Everton and Aston Villa top of the table, which is not something any of us saw coming. Let's start with the Merseyside derby and Jordan Pickford.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think you're not talking about the great saves he made, because he made a couple of right good saves. It was extraordinary when you see it again, the tackle on Van Dijk. Any player, anywhere else, on the pitch, at any time, gets sent off. Full stop, that's it. That's just the way it is. Now, I'm not for a moment saying Pickford did it deliberately. I don't think he did. In fact, I'm sure he didn't. But it was a goalkeeper's tackle, and it was totally reckless. And keepers for years have been reckless. It was one of those things they always used to do. You know, come out and get the ball with a foot straight up in front of them. You're thinking, how is that allowed? You try, somebody else try and do that, and he'd give you about a five-game ban. But that one was ridiculous. And what was quite stunning was the referee didn't even bother to go and have a look. I mean, it's quite an extreme situation. Now, I know the subtleties of the rules of VAR, they're amazingly complex and difficult for us all to understand, but it was such a big moment. And I don't think it was a penalty, because there'd been a previous infringement, it was offside, all that sort of stuff. It doesn't matter if a game's ongoing or not. If it's a sending off, you've got to do it. You've got to look at it. And I was pretty shocked that he didn't have a look at that one. As an Evertonian, I was quite relieved as well, I'll be honest with you, but I cannot see how that's not a sending off. The one thing I would say, and I'm almost pre-guessing your next question, but should they have looked at it in hindsight, you know, afterwards, and had a good look at it then? And I think it's one of those ones where I'm really keen for these things to be looked at afterwards, and if it's, you know, a vicious, deliberate thing, then you give them a 3 or 4 match ban, whatever. It's because it wasn't deliberate. It's one of those ones that's it is reckless, but it's not the way they're trying to, you know, really injure Van Dijk. He's just trying to go to the ball, and he's not a very good tackler. So had he got a ban, you know, afterwards, I'd have understood it, but I thought that was a bit harsh.
Interesting. So usually I'm a nodding dog here, and I agree with pretty much 99.9% of things you say. So you don't think David Coote, who was the VAR official, should have got on to the referee and said, you need to look at this tackle, even though you do?
Well, no, we're in agreement with that.
Okay.
You need to look at that. You need to look at it now. And he checks that. He goes over and checks that, and it's a sending off.
Okay.
And I agree with all
okay.
of that.
Okay.
The thing that I'm not over is 2 days later looking back at it and saying, right, okay, let's have a look at that now and retrospectively ban him for 3 games. I understand that you could do that. I understand the reasoning behind it. But I've always got a feeling that it's got to be really deliberate and vicious and nasty and off the ball and all that sort of stuff. It was reckless. He didn't mean it.
Yeah.
So it's one of those ones where, and I can see the flaw in the logic in this argument. Trust me, I can see the flaw. You don't need to underline it to me. But, you know, that's just not the sort of stuff I'm trying to get out of the game. I'm trying to get out of the game the stuff that's vicious, you know. And that's what I want to look back on, you know, after the game, when you have to slightly re-referee it afterwards.
We remarked upon the fact not so long ago that Liverpool over these past 2 seasons have been very lucky with injuries. They have now been distinctly unlucky. Adrian's going to be in goal for at least the next couple of weeks, and Van Dijk is going to be out with his ACL for the guts of the season. So now this gets interesting. Is Van Dijk's loss so great that it blows the thing wide open?
Yes, and short, purely because, you know, he's so important. Not just for what he gives, because he gives a huge amount. I mean, he's beginning to, we've been asking for a long time for him to start scoring goals as well, because he's brilliant with the head And he started doing that. And he's got so much to offer, but it's not just what he gives you. It's what he gives every single person beside him. Now, Liverpool gets this system they play where the two fullbacks go hammering forward all the time. And it completely and utterly confuses the life of everyone. Because, I mean, how do you stop that? How do you? Because you've got wingers to deal with or wide attackers to deal with. It's a mess, and you can't stop the quality of crosses they've got coming in because it's both sides, sometimes one defender to the other. But the only reason why you can do that generally is because you've got two centre-backs that you almost trust going man-to-man. And you will because you've got Van Dijk there. You will not unless you've got Van Dijk there. They haven't got two good enough. And very few teams have got two good enough to go that way. So they will have to do something, I think, quite different. Either ask one of the fullbacks to stay when the other one goes. Can't see them doing that. It's not in Jurgen's kind of makeup to do that. But you're going to have to get one of those sitting midfielders to seriously sit now. You know, when the fullbacks go, you've got to train that into them to say, you get back there and you sit right between those two centre-backs and give them cover, because they will get done. And they were beginning to get done anyway. And we'd watched them really losing a lot more goals than you'd expect the last 3 or 4 months. You take Van Dijk out of that and it's a big problem. I don't think any Liverpool fan would argue against that. And, you know, there is an argument. Is he the most important one? And I think it's a toss-up between him and Salah. Mm. And I think it's him. I actually think it is Van Dijk, because with Salah out, brilliant though he is, they've got other players who can come in and do a job and score goals, not to the level of Salah is. But have they got anyone who can come in and come even close to what Van Dijk gives you? Leadership, confidence with everyone around, control and everything. I don't think there's anyone close.
By the way, I'm a fan of this new Salah style of scoring a volley with zero backlift and almost a certain kind of disdain for everything around him.
Right, well, I'm trying to figure out how he does it. I always look at the technical sides of things. It was the goal he scored, was it against Leeds?
Yeah, opening day, yeah.
And I watched it and think, well, that's just a bit weird. I mean, you'll do that once in a lifetime. And then a couple of weeks later, does it again. You go, no one's get reactions that are that quick.
Yeah.
Because I don't know another player, I'm kind of thinking I put Messi in there as well, who would actually take that shot on with that little amount of time. When the ball zipped towards him, how do you get your body in the position and your shape and your foot and everything in position perfectly to not only get a strike on goal, but in the corner with whip, the keeper can't get near it. I thought those two goals that we were talking about, I just don't know any other footballers in world football that can do it. Honestly, I'm struggling to think anyone else who can actually do that skill you're talking about. I'll be honest with you, it would never have crossed my mind.
Yeah.
A ball coming in like that, I'll control it, then I'll think. And even great centre-forwards, they wouldn't do it like that. It's an extraordinary thing. His brain must work at a different level to us, to us normal human beings, because I thought they were extraordinary. I mean, God knows how you practice that. it's beyond me. It's fabulous to see. You've seen some brilliant goals at the weekend, and this season we have seen some crackers. And the final goal against Spurs was one of them ones that was phenomenal as well, and looks great because it has a crossbar, etc. But for pure technical skill, that's way ahead for me. That's the best I've seen.
Yeah, almost feels new-ish. I mean, I'm sure it's happened in the past, but not with that regularity. So Pickford, accidental/reckless though it may have been, as opposed to intentional, and Richarlison's tackle, and maybe a few other tackles. Did everything go out to really try and rough up Liverpool consciously, do you think?
I don't know if you tell Richarlison to do that. I think you tell Richarlison not to do that. So I don't think Richarlison's in that discussion, because you need to try and calm him down most of the time. But certainly Carlo's teams will battle. You know, they'll put themselves about, they'll be strong, all that sort of stuff. Roughen up, you know, there is that fine line. Everton, many years ago, under, was it Joe Royal, they had the Dogs of War team that they have. I don't think they were quite the Dogs of War team. But they're a team that won't roll over now. They're a team that you can't, they're not a soft touch anymore. And I don't think you can be a soft touch. And if you're playing against a team, however improved Everton are, man for man, Liverpool are the better side. Mm. So you've got to add something else to your game, and it has to be fight and battle. And of course, now and again, you will go over the edge to that. I kind of not convinced. I mean, having said that, there was other players that were putting that about a wee bit. I mean, Andrew Gomez wasn't holding back at all, was he? He was getting a bit overexcited as well. And the physicality of their team's a big thing. I mean, they scored two goals from headers there, you know, two goals from sheer power. I mean, Calvert-Lewin's power was completely and utterly fantastic, but you had Michael Keane's in that as well. And I was talking to Michael Keane 2 weeks ago, and I was saying to him, what about this? He scored a few this season. Is this three, maybe four that he scored this season for a centre-back? And he said this specifically he's working on it because the manager's told him to work on this. You know, don't go in there hoping you might get it. No, no, go in there, I'm going to win this. And it sounds a dead simple thing, but sometimes you need somebody to say to you, you're really good at that, and by the way, I want you to be really physical. The other thing to stick on top of that is, notice that a certain Mr. Van Dijk wasn't on the field at the time, which makes a big difference. So yeah, Everton, were they physical? Aye, absolutely, 100%. Mm. Do they need to be that way up to the very limit, to the edge? They probably do if they're going to try and stay up in that top four.
I think generally we've defended VAR and worked on the assumption that there will be some very tight calls, but they're still the correct calls. With the Mane one, there was a part of me that did think the phrase clear and obvious, you know, clear and obvious. I mean, we really were pushing the interpretation of that this time.
I've watched it time and time again. I was actually at the Celtic Rangers game, but I had my phone on, so I was looking at my phone. I'm staring at it going, I've got a big old phone. I'm thinking, no, no, that's onside. That is absolutely onside. That's level at least. Mm. And I kept on thinking, I don't understand how they've seen this. And I can't wait to go home and see it on the big screen. I went home. I still think it looks onside. Yeah. It's one of those ones. I'm with you. I'm kind of, no, I don't know. You know, and they've got better technology. And it comes to a point, it's a bit like the Hawkeye in the tennis. When you really push it to the edge, they'll tell you it is, you know, it is to a certain amount of millimetres. It can tell you, but it can't tell you beyond that. And I think you're right in the line there, where I don't think that line can absolutely tell you. It just looked awful. And I think in that situation, and again, you show hopefully that I'm not biased in any way, I thought it was a goal. And I'd have given it a goal, and to this moment, I would still give a goal for it, because it was that close that it was impossible to absolutely tell for sure. And if that's the case, you should let the goal stand.
Mm. And I mean, look, you would know better, being able to manipulate a football better than I would think 99.999% of people listening. Contact with the ball can vary, the amount of time your foot is in contact with the ball. And they have been upfront and admitted that they can't necessarily measure the exact moment that contact stops and starts. And so that ties into the clear and obvious point as well. Like, VAR is losing public support. Is there any public support for it left to lose? You know, it's in kind of tricky terrain here. They're going to have to get to grips with this.
The sadness is they get it right a lot. Yeah. They just don't talk about it. And they still get it right an awful lot. And the moment you drop it and it starts getting things wrong, we'll all complain about that. And that's just the way it is. Mm. It's still getting loads more right than it's getting wrong. Loads and loads more right. You just don't hear about it. You know, sometimes the play doesn't even stop. They're checking it while it's going on. So we're getting all these decisions right. And I say we, but the game is getting all these decisions right. But you're not hearing about them. You're only hearing about the wrongs. And that's the sadness of it. You need a lot more stats coming out from, I think the statisticians are a wee bit busy somewhere else at the moment. But I think they need the stats coming out to say, look, this is the amount of times that you've saved goals that shouldn't have been goals, or goals that are given that wouldn't have been given elsewhere. I think you need to get a lot more stats thrown out. And then you'll see, and you will see, it's still working a lot more than it's not working. But it's always the exception that proves the rule, usually. And it's kind of, it's been a bit upsetting that it's not been used brilliantly well. And I just don't know why the referee in big calls doesn't go over as often as they should do still. I mean, they have got the right to go over now. If it's a big, big call, just go. Mm. It's all right. We can cope. We can wait. You know, we'd rather you got it right. And if they can't tell, you're a referee in the game, and you can tell, well, you go with your instinct. And that's what we had beforehand. So it still can work okay, and it still is working okay. But that was a big one that I felt very... That's two, at least, in that game that I felt really quite uncomfortable with.
You mentioned the Old Firm. Rangers 2, Celtic 0. 4-point lead at the top of the table for Rangers. Celtic have a game in hand. Is this the year?
Well, I've been at the last two. By the way, listen to the stutter just before I say that to Old Firm, right? Mm. I don't know if you know the background. Do you know the background of this?
No, go on.
Right, if I say those two words in the same sentence, right, I will get tweeted to death. Because half of the community does not believe the Old Firm exists any longer, because a lot of Celtic fans think that this is new Rangers, this is a different club. So it's not the Old Firm. This is a different derby. And you can't, I cannot stutter when I say it now. So I always say the Celtic Rangers game.
Right, well, I'm going with Old Firm and they can come at me.
And I think most people do. So anyway, watching for quite a long time, and Rangers got a bit pretty close last season. Watching what I've seen this season, Rangers are ahead at the moment. And not just in points, but the way the team is playing technically. The spirit they've got within the group. The intelligence of the play. Celtic have stuck to this 3-3 at the back at the moment. And it wasn't working against Rangers. And Steven Gerrard, given his due, he's got that team playing really well. And some of the players that he's brought in have been absolutely superb. There's a lad called Kamara playing for Rangers who is brilliant. Ryan Kent, what a player he is. And Rangers are very fortunate still to have him just now. But I think there'll be bigger clubs down south that will be looking at him very closely. But they're a team that actually plays with a fantastic confidence, a really nice style of football. And I watched the Celtic team. Now, there are a lot of players missing, important players missing. You know, they had Edouard, the centre forward, missing. Christie, the most creative player, missing. But I couldn't see two players in that Celtic team that seemed to be working together in the whole team. And that's a lot. That's a big old thing to say. This wasn't even really close. The Rangers were by so far the better. The sophisticated nature of the tactics were better as well. And man for man, a long way better. So it's a big if. Rangers' big problem up until recently was, have they got enough backup? You know, because Celtic are wealthier and have been for a long time because they've had Champions League football, and they've had a lot of time where Rangers haven't been there, so they've been able to build up this success. However, you know, even Neil Lennon said after the game, you know, are they getting lazy? Are they living on past glories? And it's, you know, you got to ask that question, and he's asking that question. One of the maybe the biggest one and the biggest concern, Celtic for a long time, when they needed to rely on somebody, Scott Brown in the middle of that midfield was just going control games and hit a few people, you know, fairly but strongly, and then wind up people and then just understand the dynamic of a game and change it. And Scotty Luther, you know, he's 35 now. He can't go on forever doing it, and he won't be able to do it every single week, and I think he would accept that as well. So they've got a lot of, you know, a lot of problems there that they have to sort out. It'll be close. I have no doubt whatsoever it will be close between Celtic Rangers between now and the end of the season. I find it hard to call, but in what I've watched of them so far, and the other thing you need to put that on top of Rangers, Rangers have lost 3 goals in the league this season. You know, 2 of them were against Hibs, and 1 of them was an OG. That's all they've lost this season so far. I mean, that's pretty good going a quarter of the way just about through the season. That's kind of getting beyond luck now. That's getting to how they know how to defend. So there are a number of concerns with Celtic, and as anyone who's interested in Scottish football at all will know, it's all about one thing. It's only about 10 in a row.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I was there watching Celtic. You know, I was on those terraces when they won their 9 in a row with the team that's the old Lisbon Lions team that went into the team that had Dalglish and McGrain and McCarry and Hay, and it was an amazing team. And then I played against the Rangers team. I'm sure I've told you a story before. I was playing in a game where I was playing for Kilmarnock against Rangers. We beat them second last game of the season, and they failed to win the league. And, you know, that stopped the 10 from then. You don't get these things that often. I know it sounds like they do, but this would be a game changer if they get the 10. This would be an incredible thing for the history of that club. And it's all that matters. It really is all that matters. They don't care about anything else. And it's an incredible story. Rangers are throwing a hell of a lot of money at this. I mean, a lot of money at they will do anything to stop this. And it's kept Scottish football really interesting.
You mentioned this moment. We had the game live yesterday. Have a listen.
Sends it in towards Rice. He couldn't get near it. Snodgrass was hoping it would drop. Lanzini!
I mean, dear, oh dear, it is wonderfully nuts at times, football. And as for that goal, he had to slice the thing just to get it on target. I mean, I don't know how he got into the far corner.
I know, and keeper gets fingertip, it hits off crossbar, makes it look better, all those things. Mate, I was gobsmacked by that. But I was sitting watching the game, right, and I'd watched it with interest, but 3-0, you know, and it was a cruise. Then Josie did what he never does. He starts thinking, oh, we've won this, and starts changing the team around, thinking, yeah, but this is a mad season. I'm not saying I thought it was going to happen, But see, when the first goal went in, I was not turning that television off at any point in time. I'm watching this game because this is such a mad season. I refused. It can happen. And it's hard to explain why you think it. Now, actually, part of it is because West Ham actually hadn't been particularly bad. They'd been all right, you know, but they'd been done by an amazing forward line, an absolute phenomenal forward line. But it was just about this thought, no, I'm not turning this off. I'm sticking with this. So, yes, it was still an unbelievable shock. But you know what? In a season like this, it's kind of... I've seen a lot of mad things. We all have the 7-2s and 6-1s and all that stuff. But I think a Jose Mourinho's team losing 2 points from 3 goals up with 8 minutes to go, I think that's a first. I think that may well be one of the most amazing things that you will see. It's almost kind of glazed over because it's such an amazing game and all the things that happened. Jose doesn't do that. And I couldn't believe that he allowed that to happen.
Before you go, and there was so much football to talk about, we didn't even touch on Project Big Picture. £14.95 to watch a game of football on top of your very expensive subscription already. I mean, they're kind of just laughing in fans' faces at the moment over in the UK, aren't they?
Do you know what? One thing that surprised you slightly, I don't mind them asking for the money in normal times. That's fine. Because you've got a package and you've agreed it and all that. It's not normal times. This is extreme times. This is when the nations are struggling and people do need it. And I said right at the top of the show there, you know, football and sport is saving a lot of people's sanity. And this was not the time to do that. You know, even if something simple, like a fiver or something like that, you know, you could just about swallow it. But that really kind of stuck in the craw a lot. I'm not saying, I understand why they do it. They're making losses as well. Some of the clubs, and some of them need the money. They're talking about giving away a quarter of the money to the EFL teams had they got this new idea through. But it was just the biggest PR one goal imaginable. And, you know, you think about the amount of time they spend doing PR, the amount of time they've got organisations working them, telling them about it and how it works. I can't believe they didn't realise, A, how hard that would be for most people anyway, but in particular in these times to do that. It was a dreadful, dreadful one goal for them to do that. It was better just not to say anything. I don't know where they're going to go with it, where they're going to stand back in it as time goes by. There was another one, by the way, I don't know if you're aware of, Celtic Rangers as well. That wasn't free to air, even though Scotland's first minister asked for it. And, of course, the argument back in Scotland was, well, wait a minute, they're actually only paying for 4 games a season. It's only the Celtic Rangers games that they're really paying all the big bucks for. And if you start giving every one of them away for free, then, you know, the broadcasters are stuffed, really. They are absolutely stuffed. They won't sell anything. So to some degree, I knew where they were coming from up in Scotland.
Yeah, I get that.
Premier League, it was wrong. No. Premier League was just wrong.
Well, it was like almost they'd weaned the public onto the notion of all these games being live. And then, you know, in the thrust of the second wave hitting, it's now let's put £14.95 on one match. You know, there was an ugliness about it, I thought.
I've yet to meet anyone who thinks it was a vaguely good idea. They can understand the economics of it, as we all do, but it was just such a daftly, stupidly wrong thing. And for the amount of money they'll probably get out of that, for those number of games, in comparison to the monies they're making, it just made no sense. The amount of money they've lost in good PR and goodwill from that, it's just totally dwarfed for the money they're going to get in for it. So it was a bad mistake. I just hope they just rectify it. And they'll have opportunities to do that because there will be games that will just say, this is a big one, right? Everyone can come and watch.
Our time is done. Thanks so much. We'll talk next week. Pat and Evan, cheers.
Look forward to it. See you then.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.